We're in Inaya on Masechet Shabbat, first Perek, chapter 22. And last time we saw the beginning of a Gemara, which talks about why Chazal or Doresh, they learn out that a person should live in a new city. They learn it out from Lot that it says, oh, let's see it inside. Amar Rava Bar Machsia, Amar Rav Chama Bar Guria, Amar Rav, Lo Lam Yachzor Adam Ve'eshev Be'ir She'eshivata Krova. Person should always look for a newly settled city. She'mitoch She'eshivata Krova Avonoteh Amuatim. She has few sins. Shne'amar, hinena ha'irazot, krova lanus shama, v'himitzar. Literally it means, Lot says to the angel who came to save him, says, let's go to this city, which is close, and it's small. So the Gemara asks, my krova, what does it mean it's close? Ilema de mikrova vizuta. If he wants to say that it's close and small physically, vakachazula. You can see with your own eyes that what it is. You don't have to point it out. So therefore, comes the rabbis come that has come to teach us something else. Elamitoshe shivata kova avonotea mutzarin. What we saw last time. And that's what we're going to learn about today. That a different aspect, last time Rav Kook spoke about the advantages of living in a new yeshuv, in a new settlement, something which here we, who chose to live here in Kochav HaShachar, found a good positive reinforcement.
He certainly wasn't talking about new city near the Tappan Zee Bridge.
And today is going to give another aspect, which is the problem of the older cities, from a different aspect from what we saw last time. Let's see it. Yirat Hashem v'darkei hayosher v'atzedek hem yisod hachayim l'chol kibbutz ve'uma. The fear of God, whether it be religion, darkei hayosher, basic manners, basic derech eretz, v'atzedek, justice, hem yisod hachayim. These are the basis of life for every community and every nation. Justice, basic religion. V'chol zman shekoach hatzedek v'amisharim nikar ba'uma, as long as that drive for justice and straightness, as long as it's recognized in a nation, az kocha chazakima, then it will have strength, it will be strong, and they will continue. V'chol zman she'al yedei hara'ot ha'musariyot ha'olchot u'mitkabtzot b'meshech hazman. On the other hand, as we saw last time, the longer a city or a nation is around, and little by little they add more and more sins, and it becomes more and more corrupt. Ko'ach ha'tzedek holech v'rafa. The drive for justice becomes weakened. Ken yirpeh l'umato koach hakibbutz. To the same extent, that country will be weak in itself. And what Rav Kook is going to say, and that's really one of the topics that we've seen many times, he's going to go on to say that there is a natural ramification. There is, as opposed to what we saw in as children, that when somebody does bad, he dies, he's punished. And we see, we don't make a connection, like we spoke about once in a good teacher will give a punishment that is a natural outcome of the crime. On the other hand, if you just give a kid a gold star, or a black star if he's bad, a gold star if he's good, and there's no connection between the gold star and the action itself, then it's less of an educational process. Whereas we want to teach children, we want to teach ourselves, and that's the way God runs the world, that a person who's bad, there are going to be natural negative ramifications. And like we're going to see, the more corrupt, more self-centered a nation is, the sooner it's going to fall apart. Because as soon as people become self-centered, then the klaliyut, the aspect of nationalism and patriotism and altruism, that's just gonna disappear. Okay? Umitzad ha'ashgacha Elohit. Kevan, and also as far as God's watching over and taking care of the group, the nation. Kevan sha'uma wa kibbutz mitrofef bekiyumo. Ad she'no yachol mitzad rifyon kocho la'ashpia bo'olam u'uma letov. As soon as a certain group doesn't have anything positive to contribute to the world, why should God let them continue? That's there's a saying around Yom Kippur time, as we approach Yom Kippur, there's a saying that's more or less the same idea, that a person should give HaKadosh Baruch Hu kaviyachol as many reasons as possible to give him another year. Whereas if you're doing something constructive, you're contributing something to God's world, so kaviyachol, obviously it's a lot more complicated than that simple sentence, but in a pashtani, in a simplistic way, it's worth it, as if it were for God to give you another year, to give you the means. If you use your money well, you'll give him another reason to give you the means for money. And the same thing with health, and the same thing. On the other hand, somebody who does not watch his health, why should God give him health? And this is something that we saw last year in the Rambam, in Moreh Nevuchim, in the Guide for the Perplexed, where the Rambam also goes in this direction that also physical health and also spiritual health, they go together, and they're natural ramifications. There's a person who's a very egoistical or physical, hedonistic person, that's what he's going to be investing his time and his effort and his money, and he's going to get sick because he overdoes it. And that person also is not going to be too popular, not within his family, not within the chevra, and his life isn't going to be that productive. And there's no reason also for God to give him special protection. Okay? Ad she'no yachol mitzad rifyon kocho la'ashpia bo'olam u'uma letov. Right? This nation who is no longer giving anything constructive to the world, a nation which is into corruption and negative things, they're just adding more and more negative things to the world, so why should God protect them? And in other words, not only will he not protect them, but the natural way of the world, Benji, that's what we were talking about before, that the bad is a natural outcome of bad actions. I remember they said it in the same thing about humor. There was a big, a famous comedy show in the 60s called Rowan and Martin's Laughin'. It was a famous comedy show. And somewhere along the line, my parents stopped letting me watch it. And very soon it was taken off the air. And as a little kid, I was in second grade, you know, I didn't put one and one together. As I got a little older, I realized why my parents didn't want me to watch it, right? Because the jokes were getting a little lewder. And it's a famous example that it's not a coincidence why it was taken off the air. Not because of Puritans or conservative people, but Davka, when a comedian starts reverting to blue humor, that's a sign that he's running out of material. Right? He doesn't have anything more funny to say. So the easiest way to get a laugh out of an audience is just say a bathroom word or a dirty word, you know, which gets that nervous, whatever you want to call it, laughter out of the... And it's a cheap trick, and it's not really comedy.
It appeals to people's yetzer.
Yeah. And...
As in, I don't think just throwing out a rude word in today's society is sufficient to get a laugh.
But a dirty joke is very easy to get laughter.
Right.
Because even if it's not funny.
But maybe because, as you're sure, because that's what the audience expects. Because that's all they know. As in, that's all... they've sunk so low that that's all they found funny.
Well, it's not only because of that. It's because the yetzer is there, and it hits the nerve, and it amuses people whether they like it or not.
Trying to relate to what Rav Kook was saying.
Saying
that it's just, what you're saying is that society that's no longer productive and constructive is going to be eventually cut off by Hashem.
Yeah, so, but again, it's not that God sends out a lightning from the heavens. Although God does, Rav Kook does relate to the earthquakes that it's that almost always strike the third world, and that God does sometimes send more direct messages to get them off the historical screen as soon as possible. We'll see that in a couple of sentences. Pashut, their time has come to be taken off of the stage of history. And again, like we said, this is a theme which runs very often through the writings of Rav Kook. Something that which we just said in the Tefillot, in Rosh Hashanah, that evil eventually will dissipate. It'll evaporate like a cloud. What does it mean, a cloud? A cloud is something that it looks like there's something there. It looks like there's something significant that you can grab onto, like the cotton in the heavens. But as soon as you get there, you realize that there was nothing there in the first place.
Maybe we should put a smoke grenade on the table on Rosh Hashanah. Rimon Hashan.
Okay. I'll just read a couple of lines where Rav Kook says it pretty clearly. In Orot HaKodesh and Amud Shin Kafchet of Chelek Gimel, Chipui HaTov Alara, Hamistaklim El Yonim, Ezorei Chesed El Tamid, Makirim Et HaKiur Shebara, Baomek Yoter Gadol, Meotam Shearoges Vakasanut Hu Shilton Rucham. Great righteous people, tzaddikim, they realize evil more clearly than the evil people do. Right? Somebody who the evil contrasts them, it rubs them the wrong way. They're not naive. Right? This is a common complaint that righteous people are naive. They don't really know what's going on in the world. Rav Kook says, they know very well. They know what's bad because it hurts them more than other people. If that's their norm, they don't even notice. Umitoch shehem yodim shara mitzar atzmo hu davar she'i eshar klal she'itkayem ba'olam. But the point is that they realize, righteous people realize, people with values and ideals, they realize that bad is just something temporary. Hara, the sheker in lo raglayim. Right? It's just a matter of time before it falls. And therefore, righteous people are not scared to stand up against the evil. They recognize the evil for what it is, and they also have confidence that they can defeat it, because they know that it's temporary. Right? If you're playing, my son's watching the finals of basketball, America against, but really, basically, anybody in the world who plays against America knows that they don't really have too much of a chance, and whether it be Turkey or, it's really, just
soccer,
a question.
It's a different story.
Yeah, but that's not our example. what were we talking about?
That was an example.
Okay, that gives you the confidence if you know the outcome, and that gives you the confidence to play your best. You're not lachutz, you're not under pressure, you don't panic. When a person panics, and this is also in sports very often, when a person is nervous and panics, he does not play well. And that's why you got to relax, you got to take it easy. And that's why Rav Kook says, when you have truth on your side, you don't have to panic at all. Because you just know sometimes you need patience, but you know that in the end always wins out. And this is something that I spoke about on Shabbat. Was anybody in the shiur on Shabbat? Rosh Hashanah on the second day?
I think so.
Where, in my shiur? No. Where we spoke about what we learned about last year in Orot HaTshuvah, how nature, how the world is always going through evolution, but it's not a straight line, that there's a lot of ups and downs on the way. Okay? And but in the end, the bad guy always loses out. And this is part of the theory of evolution.
What about losing because you're always overconfident? Another thing that happens in sports, does that have a parallel in this, in the Nimshal?
The idea that the batlanut, somebody who thinks, you know, that the victory is in his pocket, and he uses it as an excuse not to do anything, you know, so the gula is going to come, but not in his time. You know, that's a lot of people, you know, they ask about Rav Kook, you know, if it's so clear that the gula is coming, so what are we working so hard? Why do we have to do mitzvot? Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of reasons. The first and foremost reason is you don't do mitzvot in order to get points, in order to get gula. You do it because it's true, because you want to be godly, because you want to be good. But in addition to that, it could be delayed, and it could come that much quicker.
Is this sort of Rav Kook's understanding of the like the disappearance of the Greeks and the Romans?
Yeah, exactly. He gives that example later on.
Okay.
That he doesn't mention the Greeks or Romans by names, but as history knows, what happens is that the when a superpower gets so strong and their Ramat Chaim, their standard of living, goes up, they don't want to fight anymore. They want to enjoy life. And so what do they start doing? They started buying mercenaries. And, you know, it was the Greeks, they took the Romans and started paying them to fight their battles for them. And it just was a matter of time before the Romans woke up and said, hey, once we're the ones that were fighting for the world, let's take the crown for ourselves. And the same thing happened to them. And
Machiavelli says that it's never a good idea to have mercenaries, because if they're bad, they lose the war and you're finished. If they're good, they figure they'll eliminate the middleman and take control themselves.
Yeah.
But the problem is the Roman Empire was intrinsically evil, because it became a killing and conquering machine that had like a violent version of a pyramid scheme that it had to keep expanding, otherwise it would die.
Tov, again, that's an example, another type of example of how the evil undoes itself. Now, if you want a more modern example, you look at Europe. You know, any society, bichlal, the klal is, when do parents bring children into the world? If it's a world which they enjoy, when the world is happy, right? The baby boom in Tufshin Kuf, 1960, more kids were born than any other year in history. Why? Because life was good, life was happy, and happy days. And on the other hand, people who are very self-centered, they don't want these kids waking me up in the morning. I like to my sleep. I like to sleep late in the morning. I want to go on vacation and enjoy life. I have a distant relative who put it this way. We didn't ask them why they don't have kids, but like when they come and they see this yeshuv hustling and bustling with kids, they feel something's wrong with them. So they have to justify, and they say, we don't want kids because it stints our style. You know, we want to go on a vacation. You want to go here. You want to go there. You want to do this. And again, so thank God, God created the world in a way that self-centered people who would not make good parents, they really aren't parents.
I have a close friend who said that the returns don't justify the investment.
Yeah, in their mind. Mm-hmm. Okay, so God lets them go in their direction, but that's not what is going to appear in the next generation. Because in the next generation, you're going to have parents who are good family, and that's part of the zigzag that Hegel talks about in history. Right?
Say that when they're in old age.
Kaelin Pericles, I'm a Zion, 37.
Yeah.
Right. If you go through it, it's all about the long range and the short range, and the guy who steps on people and the long range, the children of the Zaro of the Tzaddik is not going to be stuck, because he's part of a community, because good people help each other and bad people only help themselves.
Right. That's exactly what Rav Kook is saying. The bad societies simply will not last long. That's how God built the world. Just give one last example without getting side point, and without, I'm sure Yoshua has something intelligent to say on the topic of homos, but we know for a fact that homo families do not have a lot of children, and that is not what's going to be the stress in the next generation. Okay? In other words, that's the way the world is built. V'zoya zikna hanimtzeit b'umot she'ena kadosh baruch hu nifra min ha'uma ad she'titmalei se'ata. The idea of older nations, these old nations that haven't yet been taken off the stage of history, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not punish them until they have, and here Rav Kook is quoting the Gemara Masechet Sotah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu only punishes a nation when their sa'ah is full. And that's exactly our topic. When is a sa'ah full? When they're not contributing anything more to mankind in that evolution of the goodness of the world. V'chevan shenit mala sa'ata, as soon as their badness is filled, v'al yedei ribuy hashchatot amidgabrot, al yedei akibutz sheino mukhshar l'chaim tovim v'yesharim, right? The more corrupt a society is, that the people just are not prepared for good life anymore. They're not straight. That's not what's running the society. Midbatel ha'eged ha'pnimi shel ha'uma. The glue which holds that country together, it just falls apart because all the individuals are interested in their own selves. Right? We spoke about this last year, that physical pleasure is something selfish. Right? I can't sleep for somebody. I can't eat for somebody. And a society who's interested in physical pleasure, and they're interested, each one is for themselves, and everyone sees the other one as their enemy or as their competition. You don't have to be a genius, you don't have to be Rav Kook to realize, put one and one together, that nation is not going to survive as a nation.
They've lost their goal, and therefore everybody's self-centered, and that will just dissipate.
Right, exactly. Now, sometimes it will come, let Rav Kook say, how is it going to come? There are a couple ways, there are a couple scenarios that can be. They're taken off. They're removed. It doesn't say that God takes them off, but that's who made the laws of the ground rules, right? That's what happens to people who aren't contributing anything. Notice where Rav Kook, what's the interesting word here? Right. I would have thought that when we talk about Darwin and survival of the fittest, we think that it's the stronger who always wins. Rav Kook says, you know, he doesn't say, well, that might not happen in the battle, right? But he's saying, those who win out in the end are the more mitukan. They're the more refined, right? They're more modern. They're, in the end, that's what's going to...
They're more adapted in Darwinistic terms.
They're offering something
different. But it's not just that they're strong. It's not that they're just brute strongs, which very often goes together, right? They have more technology, they have more money.
Compared to animal brute force.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But in context of this guy, what is they're being constructive. They have constructive energy as opposed to having exhausted all their,
Yafe.
All their innovation.
And just like we said before regarding parents. Parents, when do they want to have children and raise families? When they believe in the world. So to a nation who believes in the world, who believes that the world is a good place, that there's something for the world. You know, it could be in the name of socialism, it could be in the name of democracy, it could be in the name of France or whatever. But if you believe in something, then you're going to have soldiers who, if need be, are going to be willing to give their lives for that ideal. Right? But if you don't believe in anything, then the whole idea of that nation is days are numbered. Ulifamim al pi orech hashgacha besibot hashchatot amizdamnot kafichat Sdom. Right, that's our context where we're talking about the city of Sdom and Omrah, which were
wiped out.
Right, that's why Lot is running away, and this is something which I always thought in the back of my mind, but I don't. I never would dare say it. But here Rav Kook is saying it, that those who adina chilyonot amizdamnim mahar regash uridat haaretz, all those volcanoes and earthquakes that almost always happen in those third world countries that really are not, unfortunately, are not contributing all that much to mankind. שהכל עולה בחשבון לפי ערך השימוש הכללי, שכל זמן שיושפע מאיזה קיבוץ לטובת הצדק, עין השם אל יראיו. Here Rav Kook is quoting a pasuk, "Ein Hashem el yireyav." God watches over those who fear him. In this context, it's saying that God protects those who it's worth protecting.
It's the inner construction of a society like that. In other words, a well-organized, well-built society has emergency technology and has standards for construction, and people are not living in shanties that fall apart on them and kill them when there's the least little natural disaster.
Again, that's the practical ramification of a society that doesn't value life. A society that values life has building laws, has zoning laws. You have to build buildings that can withstand a certain amount of shaking. And you don't build a country right underneath a volcano that may explode. If you value your life, if you value your children's life. And by the way, when we were out in California, you mentioned California. I don't want to come down too strong on the Californian people. Because
some of them might be listening.
We're living on a full line ourselves here.
Well,
Israel, we're right. The Jordan Valley is right on a major continental plate.
We have no choice. Eretz Yisrael is the Holy Land, and maybe that's one of the ways that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, keeps us good. There was an earthquake in Tzfat 150 years ago.
The last major earthquake in Eretz Yisrael was in 1910. I understand.
Yeah.
Or 1909. Approximately every 100 years is a major one.
Yeah.
We're due. So, just be aware of that. But I was wondering if Rav Kook wrote this before or after that last.
It was written before.
Before 1909?
But that wasn't that significant, because if I heard of Tzfat was in the 19th century.
But the thing is that
earthquakes, tsunamis, we're talking about.
But don't forget
Right. Like Yoshua said before.
If a hurricane hits Gaza, for example, or a tsunami hits Gaza, for example, the results will be very different.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying
it's a natural outcome.
It would happen.
All the Arabs who are building their houses without taking into account, you know, how many amudei they want to save a little money by having less amudei tmicha,
right,
pillar supports, right? So their kids are going to be the ones who suffer, and that society is going to be. And that, by the way, was one of the biggest tragedies of the Versailles. You remember the tragedy in Versailles,
the wedding hall
that fell down. I saw that as a moral tragedy, because if in a modern Western country, you have somebody who's changing and skimping on concrete in order to save money at the expense of lives. That's what happens to a society like that.
Okay. That happened with the Bar Lev line and all of the and all the corruption that was going on in Sinai before the withdrawal as well.
The Omnam Kasher Hakoach Haklali Afas. As soon as the communal, the klali power and reason for existence loses itself, right? There's no raison d'être. How do you say that in the phrase?
Raison d'être.
Right? As hu dome le'adam shekvar male yamav v'nizdaken. Then that nation becomes like an individual whose days are full and he's already old. He's already fulfilled his job, his role. She'en lo od ma la'asot im ha'chayim. He really doesn't have too much more to do with life. Right? Al ken hu cholef v'holech lo. U'bnei adam domin. I started saying before I forgot the mashal, when in the summer we were in Los Angeles visiting relatives, and everyone, Los Angeles people are very proud of their weather. You know, and it's true, the weather there is nice. So yes, you know, it never rains, not too much rain, no snow, it's nice all year round. So I asked, so why doesn't everybody live here? Who would want to live in New York? You know, why would they say, well, it's because of the earthquakes. And then I said to myself, what person, you know, that's a small detail, you know. You know, any minute you're sitting on lava and your life might not exist. That's like those people who drive 150 kilometers an hour and they get to work on time and they're enjoying their driving and they save time and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But they're endangering their lives and they're endangering the lives of their trampistas and everyone else on the road. And that is somebody who doesn't value life. And that is the problem of, and that's the reason why the punishment of the Rotzeach B'Shogeg is so severe. The first time I saw a Rotzeach, somebody who murders unintentionally, when you first read it, that's not fair. The guy's chopping his axe, the head flies off, hits somebody by accident. He might be going to the Irmi Klat, to the city of refuge. He might have to spend the rest of his life, 50, 60 years there. Right?
Not more than 50.
Is it not more than 50? What, even if the Kohen?
The Yovel.
The Yovel breaks it, even if the Kohen Gadol is still alive?
Yeah,
okay. But, 50 years is a long time. But what's the idea? Why do we punish somebody for it was a mistake? The answer is, if life is important to you, you don't make mistakes like that. Right? You don't drive reverse unless you have a beeper, or you have somebody making sure that no kid runs under your wheels. You don't drive 150 kilometers, right? And you could say, well, it really wasn't my mistake. But if it was important to you, then you would have taken caution. By the way, it's interesting. What is the punishment of the Irmi Klat? It's something very interesting. Number one, you remove him from his livelihood. Especially in an agricultural society, somebody who you take him out of his city and you put him into some city refuge, what's he going to do for a living? But that's exactly this guy's problem. Very often he says time is money. He wants to save time, right? Instead of driving all the way around the block, he just backs up in order to save time. That is the Rotzeach B'Shogeg. And the same thing, the idea that he doesn't know when he's going to get out. You ever think of that? Somebody who's sentenced to 20 years in prison, like in the cartoons, you know, every day he wakes up, he counts the days, right? This guy, he has no idea. He might get out tomorrow because it was B'Shogeg. It was an accident. He's not a murderer. He doesn't deserve to sit for 40 years. On the other hand, the suspense that he doesn't know, he can't even count the days, that also educates him to the idea that time is important, but not at the account of somebody else's life. Right? And the idea, if you're working with a axe, fasten it. Don't say Yeh Beseder. The whole attitude of Yeh Beseder is a moral problem. Right? Somebody who drives without checking their air and their tires. I'm not saying they have to go bananas or, you know, be a worrywart, but we're talking about the opposite problem. Somebody lives in a place because the weather is nice and that's more important to him than lives. His own life, his family's life, then that's a society which doesn't deserve to continue.
In our society, I mean, we have some paradoxes. We have there are young people who are into all this Vegas and everything with long pace, and I don't want to say exactly which.
Don't offend anybody on the.
No, I mean, people who are very into being spiritual, and they smoke cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something's not connected to something.
I just on Rosh Hashanah B'mikra, I saw Rav Tzvi Yehuda in the Igeret, in the letter that he wrote, as soon as they found out that smoking is harmful, and they began in the 60s to start saying it's not only active smoking, but passive smoking, that very day, he wrote a letter, which, I don't know if it's still there, it was hanging for a long time. I remember it hanging on the entrance to Merkaz Harav, that you're not allowed to smoke in this Beit Midrash because it's immoral. And somebody who doesn't care about other people has no right to learn Torah in this Beit Midrash. He wrote a very, very strong wording. Merkaz Harav was the first yeshiva in the world that banned smoking. Yeah, and it happened overnight. And that's the awesome thing. And you know, usually as a 70, 80-year-old Rav, Rosh Yeshiva, he's accustomed, and all the yeshivot, everyone was smoking. I don't know, the younger guys don't remember this. You remember it?
I remember when I came to the yeshiva. Was famous for smoking Marlboro until he had his heart attack in 78, I think it was.
I remember when I came to Aris, to yeshivot, that was part, there was like a cloud in all the, and the Haredi yeshivot especially, but even in the Tzioni yeshivot.
It helps you concentrate.
Yeah, you remember it in Kerem Yimna?
Not that I was around. I remember, you know Rav Nachum Rabin? I remember Rav Nachum.
Yeah.
That's the legitimization he gives for me, because growing up, that's what you learn.
Yeah.
The Rosh Hashiva would mean you finish on cigarette, you go mix them, finish on cigarette,
In Israel, people got used to smoking in the army.
Yeah.
Because of the nervousness and the attention that's involved. Right.
But the idea of that, a 70 or 80-year-old Rosh Hashiva, and was in his 70s then, you know, overnight, as soon as he hears that something is dangerous, he sits down, writes a letter, and makes a very significant change that today I don't think people can appreciate what a big, what waves that made in yeshiva. I was sitting at a wedding, one of the people from the yeshuv, with somebody, a very famous figure from the Shomron, who I won't mention his name, he learned many years in America as a rav, a famous rav, and who smokes. So I asked him, you know, Stam Kach, I liked your, you know, stories about Rav Tzvi Yehuda. And he started telling me stories about how Rav Tzvi Yehuda tried to get him to stop smoking. And he said he had the chutzpah once of saying that. Well, even the Rav Kook himself, Motzei Shabbat, used to light a cigarette. Rav Tzvi Yehuda got very angry at him. Yeah.
Before
anyone. Before anyone. Nobody knew at the time. Okay,
Yehuda thought it was good for your health. That's why he said it was allowed to do on
Yom Tov. On Cholamoid, on Yom Tov, right? Uvnei Adam domin ki zvea sadeh halalu notzitzim v'halalu novlim. Right, people and nations are like grass, like the pasuk that Rav Kook is bringing here from the Gemara Masechet Eruvin, that they wither. When does grass wither?
It dries up.
When it is lacking that livelihood. Al kena marsha mipneshi krova bishivata avonotea mutsarim. Young cities, younger settlements that don't have a lot of sins, again, that they have values, ideals, value the communal, altruism, etc., etc. Od hi omedet biyachas avonotea b'madregot atzirot sheichula od lamshich koach chayim chadashim umoilim. And here's a beautiful idea. Just when you thought that you understood the Seif, comes Rav Kook and he surprises you with a beautiful chiddush. You remember, well, we just read, Hinachti lefanecha et ha-tov, et ha-mavet, et ha-chayim, et ha-tov ve-ara. There's a very clear parallel between tov and chayim. God says, I put before you the good and the bad, the life and death. When is there life? When there's good. And that's exactly what we've been saying here. When a person takes care of himself and eats healthy and takes care of their body, etc., that person is going to, well, it's a natural outcome that he deserves to live long. God is going to watch over him. Nature is going to watch over him because that is a good person. That's a person that has what to give to the world. And like grass, as long as grass has that living drive to it, it will survive. When does it wither? When does it wither? As soon as it loses that drive for chayim, for tov, for goodness. Because tov and chayim go together. V'lo balta mizoken. And it doesn't wither from age. Shelo ispiku od apraot hamusariot shela mitzad kibbutza le'abed et kol lach hatzedek. They didn't lose the lach hatzedek, an interesting term. The moisture of justice. Justice is moisture. That's life. That's something, it doesn't dry up. It's something that has that godly, natural drive to continue. Because that's the world that God wants to continue. Vayosher hativi, and it also has that natural straightness. Naturally straight people, they survive. Naturally straight states also survive. Al kein ra'ui lahanicha. It's worth it to let them continue. Who lets it continue? Also God and also nature, because it's really one and the same.